Hang about. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hi, Denise. How are we going?
Hey, Laura. Real good. And you?
Yeah. I'm so happy we're jumping into weekend territory now. What about you?
Thank God it's Friday. I do like Fridays. They come around once a week, and they're really good.
Yeah, really good. And I like when they cut off early. I feel like Friday is the day to stop the week a little bit earlier than every other day.
Hey, just on the eye colour question, I know you asked the guys about eye colour. I'm doing my bit for everyone out there listening who has brown eyes, plain, straightforward brown eyes. That's me.
Oh, very nice. I love brown eyes, though. They're very chocolatey, I find.
Yeah, well, it depends. Sometimes they're just straightforward and brown,
but
we dominate the population, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll take that credit.
I'm sitting here with blue eyes, so I can't join in on the gang. All right, so I guess we'll jump in. So National started a drug driving petition earlier this week, and while we're seeing more action from Parliament now, what kind of sparked this petition from the outset?
Oh, well, it was a gorgeous lady called Karen, and her particular journey, and she started the petition on New Year's Eve of this year when her really precious 25-year-old son was killed by a drunk driver. So she knew that she just wanted to do something about it. I've met her in person when she came to Parliament, and she just wanted to say, hey, enough is enough. I actually did not realise how big the stats were, but there were 79 deaths in 2017 alone from drivers who were drug impaired, and that's only getting bigger. So the issue is a big one, and we just want to see some action on it.
Mm. What kind of action do you think you would like to be seeing from Parliament?
Well, we've got a great colleague, his name's Alistair Scott. He had a private members bill that introduced a regime for roadside testing in the form of a saliva kit. And look, we know that, you know, technology's trying to race to keep up, and we know that there's resources that would be required. But hey, 79 deaths in 1 year, the Dow family and their 25-year-old son, we've just got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the government's been sitting on a proposal for a while now, and we want to see some action. All we've seen at the moment, Laura, is just a discussion document. And we're saying, hey, let's move on from discussing, because it's a thing, it's real, people are losing their lives, and it's time to actually get going on this. And given that the roadside drug testing bill has twice now been turned down by the government, surely something, anything going through Parliament would be a good idea, and if they want to use their numbers to amend it, go right ahead.
So something that I've heard in terms of a problem with roadside drug testing is that while it can detect the presence of drugs within a system, it can't really detect intoxication. That's kind of what has been brought up around this conversation. What do you think of this?
Yeah, look, I would be the first one to admit I'm not well versed on the details of what toxicology tests involve and what they do and don't detect. All I know is that there are countries using them. Everyone around the world, what I'm told is that internationally we do need to dial up on the tech for this, but there are kits available. They can be used now, and the police want them. I'm sure St. John Ambulance wants them, and so do the families who have tragically lost loved ones. So I don't think it's good enough to say, oh, look, you know, it's all a bit too hard at the moment. We just need action right now.
Mm. I feel like as a country at the minute, New Zealand doesn't quite know, and this is going to be coming up with the referendum, right, doesn't quite know how to treat drug use, whether it is a health-based issue or a criminal offense. And so I feel like that kind of stunts progress. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Well, I don't know if I'd agree that we don't know how to deal with it. From a lawmaker perspective, we can only deal with what passes through the debating chambers, what passes through Parliament. And in this instance, in drug driving, we don't have anything going through Parliament at the moment, and we need it. There is the other wider cannabis debate, and I know that we've talked about that in prior weeks, Laura. Mm. Sometimes you just need to move ahead and get off the frozen train, because we need action now. And when people are dying, it is about action now. I would just say one thing about the wider drug debate, and that is that if you look internationally where people are liberalising drugs, you are having issues around safety and resultant deaths. I just talked to a friend today who's really good friends with an emergency nurse in Vancouver, and she's just retired and said that toxicologists over in Vancouver, where cannabis has been legalised, are just shaking their heads. They were on the train where they were getting alcohol-related deaths, vehicle deaths, down to almost negligible. And now they're straight up there with drug-related deaths. And, of course, Canada's staring down the barrel of a major opioid crisis. That's not quite here, but it will be coming our way. So if you want to talk about health, you've got to talk about ultimately keeping people safe.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a fair comment. I guess when it comes to the drug debate, we're kind of expecting some problems to arise if we do end up legalizing drugs.
That's everyone would agree with that. By nature, drugs are a very risky business.
If anything, alcohol is a risky business as well.
So I agree.
And yeah, I guess we probably shouldn't get into this debate, but I definitely agree in terms of getting some legislation pushed through in terms of drug driving. I think that's really important. Shifting on to the Business Partnership Agenda's website, I heard it was a bit of a mess recently. Why do you think it's important for a government to be putting out a professional website?
So the context for this, Laura, is that last year the Prime Minister wanted to address falling business confidence in New Zealand.
Yes.
And in fact, it wasn't just, we need to address it. She herself said it was an elephant in the room with great big flashing neon signs and giant lights and fireworks. Her words, not mine. So falling business confidence clearly was, at the time last year, a big deal for the Prime Minister. And she launched the Business Partnership Agenda. And one of the tools for that was setting up a website where you can go and you can see what the government's doing to help out business and specifically small business, because they are the engine room of our economy. But what's happened, I find this hard to believe, in all honesty, that the website has had no work done to it. Looks like it was just a one-off PR event because it references the Chief Technology Officer. And if you remember, that was a really controversial issue where the government announced a CTO and then scrapped the idea, and it involved the Prime Minister's friend. And then 11 of the website links on the page don't even work. Mm. So all that really, I'd love to hear the government say otherwise, but what that screams out loud is that they don't have a plan. There is no agenda to address business. And what we've got is a website that was whacked up and then forgotten the next day with the regular news cycle. How's that supposed to give us confidence?
Yeah, I guess in terms of that, I am curious about if you've heard anything in terms of the business community about how they feel in regards to government with this website?
Well, I haven't... are you saying specifically how they feel about the Business Partnership website?
The website, but also just the action plan.
General.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, you just need to look at business confidence surveys over the last year. Mm. So it hasn't been trending upward, that's for sure, and just the opposite. So it's not just the general vibe right with business. It's about specific things that take place and go through the passage of Parliament that give them either a feeling that they are being taken seriously, that they're going to be looked after or encouraged to grow, because, right, we need to grow business in order to have jobs, in order to run our economy. And when you've got stuff like the industrial relations measurements going through, when you've got ministers who aren't in their language and their vibe able to give that confidence, well, then people just go, well, would I invest in my business? Would I put in new money, new investment to get me through the next year? If you look at the surveys, most businesses are saying, no, I'm going to just hang tight. I'm just going to sit on my investments and see what happens. That's not a good place for us to be.
I think in terms of business investment, it's something I've brought up before, but I think it correlates quite closely with housing, because people are often wanting to invest with more of a surefire thing that's going to be successful. So I think with New Zealand in particular, you see a lot of investment in housing, which could have a disproportionate effect on business investment. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, well, yes, so it is related to business investments, but it's also residential investments. You know, you've got regular mum and dads investing in housing and so on. And we've, you know, we've had a love affair with property in New Zealand for a very long time. So there's nothing new there. But when you've got business confidence falling because of measurements, or even you could say lack of measurements from the government, that's something different. So I wouldn't personally chalk it up to just the housing market being the issue, or the housing investments in housing being the issue. It's much wider than that. It's a complex thing to understand business confidence, which is why we have independent surveys going on. You know, some of them from major banks, but some of them from NZEI and the like. And we do have to pay attention to it. It's exactly why the Prime Minister said the whole issue was and should be in flashing great neon signs. She herself admits that it's these signals are really important.
Shifting on to our last subject of the day. So there is currently an inquiry into the Ministry of Social Development's allegedly invasive practices.
Yep.
So these practices were implemented in 2012 under National. And while I know you weren't in Parliament at the time, do you think it's a fair call for the Ministry of Social Development to have access to detailed bank records and pictures on someone's phone for beneficiaries?
You know, look, I'll tell you what did not start under us, and I think it's sort of unfair to couch it that way, is MSD investigators misusing powers and breaking the law to investigate cases. We don't support that. You know, we'd never support extending powers to intrude way too deep into people's private lives. That's breaking the law, and we do not support that in any instance. So having important powers to make sure that people don't commit crime, that's the right thing. But when it goes too far and steps over the line, that isn't the right thing. So we, you know, just to say one more time and crystal clear, we do not support breaking the law to investigate cases. That's just not on.
Some of the language that I've heard over my years looking at politics, when talking about beneficiaries, we have some really negative language that comes out, not just in New Zealand, but across the world. Do you think these kinds of practices do stem from this really toxic way of people of looking at people on the benefit?
Well, yeah, and that's not right. So it's not right to look at people who are connected with MSD in a toxic way. So, you know, we all have basic human rights, and that's to be locked in, supported and protected. But I guess some of the problem I just recently learned a stat, Laura, that MSD themselves have said that 95% of the time, this is really high figure, 95% of the time people don't provide the necessary information when they've been asked directly for it. And so there's the rub, right, is that when those who are receiving benefits aren't honest, it delays investigations. And so you've got that there's a partnership here between MSD and their clients, and people do need to be honest, because quite frankly, if you're involved in benefit fraud, right, it means that you're stealing from those who need it most. And that's not a good thing, because there's a fixed budget and it only can go around so many people at so many times. So the idea that that we do need to look out for and protect the rights of those who are connected to MSD, that's exactly right. But we need to be careful about being honest and making sure that the pie is good for everyone.
Yeah. And I guess in terms of including those figures, though, 95% was it?
Yeah. MSD said 95% of the time people don't provide the necessary information when asked directly.
But that sounds more like people don't necessarily feel comfortable. I wouldn't say 95% of people are knowingly abusing the system.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Look, I don't know what the context is for that, but that's something that MSD have said themselves.
Yeah, but that could sound like MSD is potentially just ineffective in getting that information.
Possibly. You know, maybe that's something that does need to be investigated further. But at the end of the day, that's a really high figure.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, maybe it is time for us to ask some of the honest questions. But I guess the reason I bring that up, Laura, is just the context of it is tough for investigations to take place if they're going to be extended and long, because you've got to keep going back to get the right answers from MSD clients. It's not an easy situation, but... Mm-hmm. You know, back to what the current situation is, if MSD staff are breaking the law to investigate cases, that is not on.
So you support an inquiry then?
Yeah, well, my understanding is that that's exactly what's taking place right now. And, of course, you know, efficiency and making sure that the system runs right is definitely what we need to look into.
Absolutely. Now, ending on my final question, the personal one that I like to ask. So earlier this week, I had someone in my team, not naming any names, they told me I looked tired. Now, this is something I don't think you should say to someone. I even got called fat today, but it was more joking.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Who was that person?
I close my lips, no names. But what are your blacklisted comments that you don't want to hear from someone about the way you look or the way you are?
Well, I'm going to start with the one that you mentioned first. You look tired. Because I get that quite a bit, because I have kind of dark circles under my eyes, which I think are just hereditary.
They are.
And so there's not a lot in short of piling on the old concealer. You know, look, hey, if I look tired, tell me something nice so I feel pepped up. Don't tell me I look tired. Tell me, hey, you've done something really right today, or you look good. And then maybe I'll have some more spring in my step and I won't look tired. Reverse psychology. Bring it on.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea.
Well, yeah. Now, look, you can't help but think, maybe it's a bit of a female thing too, unfortunately. You can't help but think, hang on, what did they mean by that?
Exactly
how do I look tired?
What do you mean I look tired?
Yeah.
Are you saying I don't look good today?
Hey, by the way, I have met you, we have spent time together, you are not fat.
Oh, I'm not thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't think I'm tired either. Well, you have a nice weekend, Denise. We'll talk with you next week.
You take care, Laura. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.